Judicial Circuit. Hear ye, hear ye, hear ye. All persons having business before this honorable court are admonished to draw near and give their attention as the court is now sitting. God save the United States and this honorable court.
Okay, good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Our first case for argument is Freedom of Religion versus Chow. Mr. Bolton.
Good morning, Your Honors. I appreciate the opportunity to be here this morning to seek the court's help on an issue that I think is very important to all of the parties. The issue relates to, in many respects, it appears to be simply a nuance of no particular moment, but I think it's an important nuance. And the nuance relates to whether or not general budget appropriations made to the executive branch of the federal government can be constrained by Your Honors, by the federal courts, in terms of the use of those appropriations for purposes that are alleged to promote or endorse religion.
Mr. Bolton, I wonder if we could start with what I think of as an aspect of the nexus requirement under Flast against Cohen, because you know, you won actually part of this case, and I thought part of the issue here was whether standing on the part of taxpayers exists for things that are a couple of steps removed from the ultimate expenditure of funds appropriated by Congress for activities that somehow support religion. Your complaint really seems to me at bottom to say that members of the executive branch cannot stand up and express their opinion that religion is a good thing somehow.
That's not what we intend, and that's not what we have argued. And to the extent that the complaint suggests that, let me explain. It's not that the president, for instance, cannot go on TV or make a speech that my clients may object to as endorsing religion. That's not the issue.
So you agree if the president wants to get up there and say, I think it would be good for the moral fiber of this country for everyone to belong to an organized religion, you think he can say that?
I think he can say that. But if the federal government hosts and it's these conferences, for instance, that have been a focus of the complaint, where these are conferences where ostensibly they're basically outreach programs, and our complaint is that they're actually really preferential outreach to faith-based organizations. Ostensibly, they're supposed to be outreach on how to seek federal funding for both community organizations and faith-based organizations. But the complaint is that, in fact, these programs that are being funded by the federal government are not neutral, that they're expressing a preference for the faith-based organizations. So the distinction that I would make between, for instance, the president standing up, coming on TV and making a speech, and this type of program would be, if we liken these conferences to federally funded courses or some sort of an educational program that you're inviting the public to come and attend to, and you're sponsoring a program. You're sponsoring something. It's not just the
Does this bear on the issue of standing? Would there be standing in such a case? Suppose you wanted to challenge the president's religious statements. You might have a loser of a case, but do you think there'd be standing to?
In the scenario that just because with the president making a speech that included content that was objectionable to at least some.
Look, the question is there standing in the case that Judge Wood gave? there isn't a good claim, but is there standing?
Right. I wouldn't claim standing in that case.
What's the difference between that case and this case from the standpoint of standing?
For instance, Your Honors, I think in the Seventh Circuit have...
the Seventh Circuit. What's the difference between those two cases?
The difference is this. In the one instance, there's really not... there's really not a disbursement for something. The disbursement that we're talking about is the disbursement to fund these programs, these conferences.
So could I just clarify? You're saying essentially that there's an industry out there that teaches people how to write federal grants, basically, and there are actually people who are hired by universities and by charitable organizations and by medical organizations and others to say, this is the way you prepare a grant proposal, blah, 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 and that that's what's happening at these conferences, that that's actually the service being provided?
Yes, Your Honor, and that's okay. exactly the complaint. And it's like, for instance, at these conferences, we're objecting that there is speech content, just as there would be in any sort of course, for instance, that promotes religion. But if we change the scenario and say at these conferences, which are undisputedly being funded by appropriations, Article 1, Section 8 appropriations, if at these conferences they were handing out religious literature or Bibles that were paid for, under the government's position, that shouldn't make any difference to the standing issue. That, in fact, they could, that the federal government, in terms of the executive branch, at these conferences, the use of general budget appropriations could be used to hand out religious literature. They could be used to engage.
So, can you actually identify a government money that has been devoted to these activities?
The complaint alleges that these conferences are being funded through general budget appropriations to the various agencies. My understanding of how it works is that basically these conferences, there's a number of, and the number.
Well, what's the basic appropriation?
The basic appropriation.
Out of which this money comes, right?
If you want me to identify the budget. Name or number, it's the annual budget appropriation to the various federal agencies.
For what?
So for example...
What does it say?
Pardon me?
What's appropriation for what? They don't just give a lump of money and say, you know, Defense Department gets $450 billion a year. It's more, it's broken down into programs. So what program does this come out of?
My understanding is that the program, that it comes out of, the conferences are being organized and supported by the faith-based, the offices of faith-based.
Look, I'm asking a much simpler question. The money for these conferences has to ultimately be traceable to a congressional appropriation. So a congressional appropriation for what is providing the money that the government then funnels to these or uses for these conferences?
Your Honor, there has never been any dispute, to my knowledge, that in fact these conferences are being
just
funded.
Just answer my question. What is the appropriation out of which they're coming?
The appropriation, as I understand it, comes from each of the each agencies. For instance, the Department of Health and Social Services.
Look, agencies don't make appropriations. What is the congressional appropriation to an agency from which money is spent on these purposes that
you're challenging? For instance, the 2004 or the 2005 budget appropriation to the Department of Health and Social Services, which budget request includes funding for the Office of Faith-Based and Community.
But well, look, I mean, you don't appropriate just a lump of money to HHS. That's not how it works. The appropriations have names. Could be money for administration, could be money for construction, could be money for, you know, research. It has to be for something. So presumably there's an appropriation to HHS, and out of that appropriation, these executive officials disperse funds to various things that aren't specified in the appropriation. I'm just interested in what is the appropriation called out of which this comes?
My understanding is that the appropriation that is funding these particular organizations and is prorated among the agencies goes to the particular agency of the Office of Faith-Based and Community.
I don't understand why you can't answer my question.
I mean,
you're not asking what the appropriate. There's no appropriation by the agency. What is the name of the appropriation to the agency, to the department, out of which these payments are made for the conference?
Well, like, just for example, the Department of Justice, there's part of the appropriation goes to the Office of the Attorney General, part of the appropriation goes to the Antitrust Division, part of the appropriation goes to the U.S. Attorney's Office, and so on. And maybe you don't know, and if you don't know, that's an answer. But the line item within the appropriation would be the answer. If you knew it, that's what Judge Posner said.
And I don't know. But it isn't the case that everything, that all of the the general budget appropriations to the agencies, they're not all line item appropriations. And in fact, that's one of...
They leave the secretary, maybe, or the attorney general, a slush fund that he can do whatever he wants to with, perhaps. But it has to be within the overall appropriation for that department.
And that is my... My understanding is that the appropriation process goes, in the first instance, to the Department of Justice.
You stubbornly resist answering the question. I'm sure you don't know the answer. That appropriation is going to have a name. It's going to be an appropriation for a purpose. It's not going to just say, this is for the Justice Department. As Judge Wood said, it may say, these are, you know, discretionary fund for the Attorney General or... other administrative expenses, something of that sort, which would give him a little flexibility. Or it could be that it's a specific appropriation, but that the department has authority between appropriations, you know, they're annual, between appropriations, often there's authority to move money from one item to another.
The specificity that Your Honor asks for, I don't know. But you have to understand that the case we understand, for instance, that these conferences that are being sponsored by the respective offices of faith-based and community organizations are being funded. We know that. In terms of the case was dismissed on standing. In terms of part of the discovery that was outstanding. At the time that the court dismissed the case on standing, is, you know, we know that you've got funding, we know it's coming, and we know that that these programs are these conferences, for instance, are being funded. In terms of identifying the specific where, for instance, in the Department of Justice budget, that particular office is being funded. I can't tell you. I can't tell you. But we also know that when the president created the offices of faith-based and community organizations, those executive orders also specifically said subject to appropriations, and we know that they are being funded. But I don't mean to be stubborn, but I can't tell. I don't know specifically what.
Fine. What you don't know.
But we know that they're being funded.
You said that.
So the issue is whether or not these types of disbursements, not just the incidental to the president making a speech, but the organization of conferences where people come and they are confronted
with... How do you get around this, you know, I mean, it may be kind of silly mechanical thinking, but the idea is that all the Establishment Clause does is limit congressional appropriations, you know, for religion. And since there is no appropriation for religion here, you know, therefore, there's no standing.
Well, we know that the executive branch doesn't spend a penny without an appropriation, because in fact, the Congress's limitation on the executive branch is precisely.
That's true, but there's a difference between, or there may be. I don't know if there's a difference, but the argument is there's a difference between Congress appropriating money from religion and appropriating money for other purposes, for general purposes, general administration, and then the executive officials decide to spend it on a religion.
The suggestion in the question, Your Honor, is that there must be something more than just an appropriation and its misuse. There must be some responsibility by Congress for the misuse. But and the implication then is that
Isn't that the thinking behind FLAST, that somehow, since the Establishment Clause limits congressional spending, any spending for religion, you know, is some
FLAST
violation
said,
of taxpayer rights or something?
FLAST made the distinction between appropriations and the distinction between statutes that constitute regulatory.
I thought your answer to that was essentially Bowen, that the Supreme Court...
It is Bowen. Oh. It is Bowen, Your Honor. May I quickly...
Yeah, quickly.
I don't even remember what...
We'll give you some more time.
Okay. Thank you, Your Honor.
Mr. Sturgill?
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court, Lowell Sturgill for the government. In FLAST and Bowen versus Kendrick, the Supreme Court...
I find this whole area completely fantastic. There clearly is no standing in any conventional, you know, Lujan-like sense to challenge any kind of congressional appropriation, because it's not that the harm to the taxpayer is trivial. It's probably zero, because, you know, there's a limited budget. If they don't spend your money on this thing, they'll spend it on someone else. You're offended, but of course offense is not a ground for standing. So since taxpayer standing simply doesn't comport with Article 3, it must be the Supreme Court thinks that there should be some method of raising challenges, of getting judicial review of establishment. Otherwise, Congress could just say, well, we're establishing the Catholic Church. That's the new national religion. We're going to appropriate money for it and so on. Is there any way that kind of activity could be challenged under conventional standing principles?
I think so, Your Honor. For example, these conferences. If the plaintiffs could show that there are a number of these conferences occurring and that one of the attendees objects to something religious that's said at a conference, and that the conferences will recur and that the attendee will be likely to keep going to these conferences, you may be able to assert a sort of traditional injury in fact.
What traditional injury? You're offended because someone has a different religion from you? How is that standing? How does that
No, I thought actually, just to maybe if we could tweak your hypothetical and then you can answer that, I thought the allegation at least was, and I'll make it maybe a little bit more stark, or in its most stark sense, was that these conferences were taking place. They are kind of how to do seminars on how to get federal money for various programs, and the only people who get that benefit are the religious organizations. If you're a secular organization, you're shown the door, basically. And so it is a preferential giving of government assistance based on the criterion you are religious. And so the people who are excluded, the non-religious organizations, say, hey, we want part of the pie, too. We're injured. That's my the best I can make of this complaint in terms of what they seem to be alleging. And if that's true, even though you may win on any number of grounds I can think of, which might include, you know, neutrality or non-discrimination or what have you, that doesn't sound like a standing issue to me. It sounds like a merits issue.
Well, I think, first of all, I don't think that's really what they're alleging. They're not alleging that somebody has been left out of the conference. Rather, they're alleging that what happens at the conferences impermissibly promotes religion.
I'm not sure that that's right, though. I mean, looking at the complaint, they talk about preferential funding, and they talk about... particularly with the, you know, as long as we're focusing on the conferences, they've got a lot of stuff in the complaint that looks to me like pure advocacy, which is, I think, especially vulnerable to what Judge Posner is talking about. But
Well, I agree. For example,
there are other things, though, where they say actual preferences to these faith-based organizations, preferentially used faith-based organizations.
Well, in response to that, that I believe reflects the fact that the plaintiffs did, as you mentioned before, identify five particular grants that they thought violated the Establishment Clause. The government didn't say that the plaintiffs lacked standing to challenge those grants because...
Well, I understand that, and I guess now they're saying this is the next case where they're also saying, however hidden, whether it's inside the budget of the secretary, you know, for his head office or wherever it is, somewhere this money is coming through and being used to advance religion. And unfortunately, the ground that the district court seemed to rule on was that as long as you just gave the secretary a nice big slush fund, the government could go off and establish the Catholic Church with it, which is... can't be right.
Well, in fairness to the district court, and I think accurately, I don't think that's what the district court held.
The district court said it's not a program, you know, and so as long as you don't have a line item in the budget that doesn't call it a program, under the district court's opinion, the there's no standing.
No, I think the district court said there was no disbursement. In Bowen, no disbursement to a grantee. Take the Bowen versus Kendrick and Flass versus Cohen, which are the only two cases we have from the Supreme Court that allowed taxpayer standing. Both involved classic taxing and spending programs where money was given from the government to a grantee for a particular purpose. We don't have that in this case with respect to the claims that are remaining against these defendants. The claims against the agency heads with respect to those five programs that they identified were classic taxing and spending programs. They had standing to challenge those. They're no longer in the case. They won on one of them. What's
but
left is this amorphous claim that speeches and preparatory kinds of general activities violate the Establishment Clause, and the Supreme Court has never gone that far.
Well, but you use the district court, interestingly, does not use the word disbursement. That would be one test you could imagine. You could imagine saying you don't have taxpayers standing until you have zeroed in on the government official who disperses funds in arguable violation of the Establishment Clause. He just says... This is a page 9. These defendants are not charged with the administration of congressional programs. And he goes on about talking about the fact that they're, you know, just general executive officers.
I think, again, the district court also mentioned, as I believe is the case, that these defendants don't and are not responsible for dispersing any funds. Their job is basically educational, and their job essentially is to just educate the public and the agencies about what the rules really are.
But isn't that a question of fact? I mean, you say that they don't disperse funds, but as you well know, working for the government, if you are engaged in an educational program, you're spending money. You know, you're creating literature, you're perhaps paying for the travel of people who go to wherever the education is going to be furnished. You're spending money, and Congress has furnished your whatever agency it may be with that money. And these people are saying, we don't want you to spend money going around proselytizing.
Well, the key again is they're not spending money in taxing and spending programs. They're not dispersing money to grantees.
What's a taxing and spending program?
It all came eventually from taxation or borrowing, right?
I'm sorry.
The government spends comes eventually from
the
congressional appropriation.
They didn't
have
a bake sale.
That.
I mean, they.
May I try? I think you need to start with Frothingham and Flast itself. Frothingham, the general rule, there's no taxpayer standing to challenge government action. In Flast, the Supreme Court said, we'll have a limited exception.
Why? And what's the reason for the exception?
The reason is the court...
Since it's contrary to Article 3.
The court thought that because the original purpose of the Establishment Clause was so directly linked to prohibiting the giving of money out from the government for religion... That justified an exception.
How could that affect Article 3?
We haven't argued in the brief that Flass was wrongly decided, which I think is where maybe going. We may do that someday.
Right.
But
once you get over
here.
That terrible hump, I don't understand how you distinguish this from any other case. Well, suppose the president issued an executive order saying he is establishing the Catholic Church as the national religion of the United States, and he is urging people to make donations to the church. I'm not going to spend any federal money on it. So are you saying that there's no standing to challenge that executive order?
No taxpayer standing. If I could go back to Flast...
Well, what other standing is
perhaps
there?
None.
Perhaps none. Well, that's what's so strange, right? They wouldn't have violated Article 3 and allowed taxpayers standing. It's completely contrary to Article 3, unless they thought it's somehow important to allow the Supreme Court to adjudicate establishment issues. Well, if that's true, then it would be perfectly preposterous to say if the president, you know, executive order, no money, just executive order, establishes a religion, it can't be challenged.
Well, I think here's what we have to... All we have is Flast. And Flast, the Supreme Court made it clear that it was concerned about allowing this new doctrine to go too far and to allow, essentially, the kind of claims you've said.
You're saying it's completely arbitrary. So it's a doctrine just for, you know, congressional appropriations. And, of course, there are many ways without the express appropriation which the executive branch can achieve what... You know, Congress can't do directly.
Well, you're reading Flast to say there has to be a line item, in a sense. There has to be a program called Medicaid or something. And if it's in a general appropriation, it doesn't count.
That's not our position. Our position is... I'm sorry.
Well,
I don't mean to be...
I don't see how it isn't your position. But anyway, go ahead. Tell me.
I would just like to read one sentence from Flast. I think this addresses Judge Posner's question and yours, Judge Wood. The Supreme Court said at page 102... It will not be sufficient to allege an incidental expenditure of tax funds in the administration of an essentially regulatory statute. And what the court did was lay down a bright line and said, okay, we will have Establishment Clause standing for taxing and spending programs, disbursements out, as the Supreme Court later explained in Bowen, but we're not going all the way. We're not going all the way to the hypothetical Judge Posner posed, and the vehicle for limiting it is this formalistic distinction.
But, you know, I read that same language, and it seemed to me it required, I wouldn't even call it a crisp line, it requires us to draw the line between something that's incidental and something that's central. And when you establish a whole network of specifically named offices called the Office of Faith-Based and Community Initiatives, it's hard for me to say that the faith part of that is incidental. It seems actually that was the whole purpose of, and if you look at the president's speeches, if you look at the executive order, if you look at everything, that's not incidental. I mean,
well,
so
I don't think it depends
how you read that line.
It was not the whole purpose of the order. In fact, it was not the central purpose of the order. If you look at the executive orders, this is the faith-based and community initiatives. The both are equally important. And the point was to go out and reach out to organizations, both secular and religious, that were overlooked and not participating in the process because they're small and because they're not involved. And the president wanted to reach out to all groups.
Yeah, but that's Judge Wood's point about, on the merits, this may be defensible as neutral. But the question is whether you can get rid of the case by saying there's no standing.
Could I make one just 30-second second response to Judge Wood? And that is, I think in looking at what's incidental and what's not, you're right. But the key is to look at whether there is a particular grant and whether what's going on is a central part of the grant or whether it's incidental. And here, these programs, these conferences, do not result in any particular grant being made. The agency heads don't make grants, and the plaintiffs don't allege. I think this is important. They don't allege that the plaintiffs make grants or have any involvement in the grant process at all. They don't sit on peer review panels. What they do is the most basic outreach, and what we're saying is that's too far removed. It's different from Flast and Bowen, and this court should hew to the line in Flast and Bowen in order to prevent the doctrine from being taken further than the Supreme Court has taken it.
But aren't we supposed to take at face value such claims as that appellees' actions through the support of national conferences funded by, you know, Congress? At the conferences, faith-based organizations are singled out as being particularly worthy of federal funding because of their religious orientation, and the belief in God is extolled as distinguishing the claimed effectiveness of faith-based social services. I mean, it's probably maybe completely false, but suppose that's true. And suppose that's alleged. So why doesn't that suggest, you know, federal money, not in huge quantities, of course, federal money is being channeled deliberately into conferences at which these religious organizations are, you know, promoted and congratulated and celebrated and so on?
Because the conferences don't have anything to do with the funding decisions. The only reason any group gets any money is that they submit a grant application apart from... Now, they don't submit the grant applications at the conference. They have to go out and submit an application. The agency reviews it. If it's deemed acceptable, it's granted by the agency head, not by these defendants.
But that sounds more like a ripeness argument on your part than a standing argument, that kind of nothing's happened yet sort of argument. And at the point in time when it does happen, then come on in and complain.
Well,
then from religion or whoever you are.
At that point, I think if the plaintiffs could allege that any of these defendants was actually directing grants, you'd have a very different case. They have not alleged that. I think they should be held to their complaint.
Well, but
second,
they are alleging, I guess, that they're doing these conferences.
It would be ultra-virus. There would be no standing to bring an Establishment Clause challenge because they don't have the authority to do that. Just look at the executive orders, which says exactly what they do and can't. They can't make grants.
No, they agree they're not making grants. I mean, they're focusing on these conferences and this advocacy and saying go out and be religious stuff, you know.
So I think you put your finger on it. The question is what's going on incidental, merely incidental, preparatory, not a core part of, not a grant itself, but separate and apart from it. I think that's what we have here. We have conferences that don't result in grants.
Well, suppose the government believes, they look at the Mormons, you know, Mormons have paid taxes, they have low divorce rates, and, you know, admirable citizens. Suppose they say, you know, really like the Mormon religion, obviously very good, has very, you know, good civic consequences. So we're going to sponsor a number of conferences at which Mormons, you know, we're going to have Mormons, we're going to invite them, and they're going to pass out, you know, conversion cards or something. And we think this would be very, very healthy to encourage the spread of Mormonism because of its civic effects. Would that be something that anyone could challenge?
Well, perhaps on equal protection grounds, a group that's not invited to the conference.
No, on establishment grounds. Would you say there was no standing to say they were, you know, establishing the Mormon religion because they had singled it out and they were organizing these conferences? They were paying for these conferences, inviting people to come and promote Mormonism and encourage conversions and so on.
If, as in this case, the conferences don't result in the making of grants, then there's no standing.
No grants in this.
No standing.
It's
just taxpayer standing.
Yeah. No taxpayer standing. Under FLAST and Bowen. Yeah. And I think the rules are clear. And
because, of course, money would be spent. So the government says, we want to have a conference in Washington, and we're going to pay for everybody who comes to the conference. We'll pay their transportation. We're going to have the head of the Mormon Church and Mormon proselytizers and some people from other religions, and we're going to publicize the conference and, you know, advertise it. And our hope is that this will encourage conversions to Mormonism and result in better citizenship, lower divorce rates, and so on. So your position would be there'd be no taxpayer standing.
That's
even
correct.
Though government funds were being used to promote religion.
I think that's closer to your pure speech kind of hypothetical, where the government is engaging in speech apart from,
well, no,
separate from any...
They're spending money. It's not
right.
A speech by the president. They're spending money to bring people to the conference to proselytize.
Well, in Valley
they're
Forge...
They're inviting them to, you know, mass baptism or something in the reflecting pool, right? I
mean, in Valley Forge, the government spent money, too. That was a grant of property to a private religious organization. Obviously, it would have required money spent on federal salaries of people making the grant incidental expenditures. That was not enough to create taxpayer standing. In the Schlesinger case, for example, is a challenge to the reserve status of members of the military. under the ineligibility clause. And the Supreme Court said that merely because these people were getting federal salaries, which the plaintiffs wanted recouped, that was an expenditure of federal funds, but it wasn't enough to give the plaintiffs taxpayer standing. So I think what we have is a very formalistic doctrine the court has given us to keep this very limited exception to the general rule from eating up everything. I mean, the plaintiffs, for example,
just
have not articulated
an establishment, right?
Their theory
no one is
that
proposing right. to expand it beyond establishment.
No, that's
this
right.
is a beachhead.
Which is why Schlesinger doesn't really
right.
matter, because that
right.
was just
that
the incompatibility.
But that's
clause.
Not the ground the Supreme Court ruled on. They didn't make that argument. They ruled that the plaintiffs hadn't satisfied part one of the FLAST test, which is what we're talking about, the incidental. The spending of money on an essentially regulatory program. Judge Ripple, I think you were going to ask a question. I don't.
No,
and I might not have
corrected you when you simply said standing as opposed to taxpayer standing. It's entirely possible that there would be a direct and palpable injury on some other ground.
Right. Thank you.
Okay. Well, thank you very much, Mr.
Thank
Sturgill.
You.
Mr. Bolton, how much? Well, you don't have any time, but we'll give you a minute if you have anything interesting to say.
Real quick, counsel's argument that only programs of disbursements to third parties can violate the Establishment Clause, I think, ignores the fact that you can use money to promote religion in a variety of ways that do not require a disbursement, a grant program. And that's what we have here. Basically, we've got, I likened it to if you had a program or an educational course. If the content of that is being funded and it endorses religion, it can violate the Establishment Clause. The other point I want to make is counsel quoted what he thought was the decisive statement in FLAST, recognizing that it's not enough to simply allege an incidental expenditure of an essentially regulatory statute. This appropriations to the federal executive branch for the operations that they maintain, including the Office of Faith-Based and Community
Did
Organizations.
Did any of the people who attended these conferences get money, you know, transportation money or something from the government? Forget the grants. But did any money pass to private people? Or did they have to pay their own way to the conference?
The conference is not. They do not charge for the conference. The conference.
No, I know they don't charge the conference. But do they pay people to come to the conference? Pay their transportation or pay them an honorarium or something?
Oh, I see. In terms of speakers.
No, in terms of attendees,
no.
The religious people. Do they get? Can you submit a request to have your airfare reimbursed by the government?
Do they what?
Can you get your airfare reimbursed by the government?
No, they do not.
No. Okay.
No. So no money passes outside of government, so to speak.
No government passes outside, or no money passes outside the government. So, thank you, Your Honor.
Okay, well, thank you very much, Mr. Bolden and Mr. Sturgill.
Thank you, Your Honor. Thank you.
And we'll move on to our next case.